Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Thank you for joining us today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Dr. Ron Stotz. Dr. Stotz is a transformational guide and life coach, author, and inspirational speaker. Thank you for joining us today, Ron.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate it. Good to be on the show.
So let's start off with the opening question. What does success mean to you?
Success is an elusive word. I mean, I worked with many billionaires, millionaires, and other very successful people, and they all find that at some point in their early life, they have, whether it's consciously or not, a very clear definition, a sense of success. And oftentimes, especially the younger they are, the more around money that is. And, I was just working with a client the other day. We recently started working together, and, he's reaching 60 and a very successful executive, and he's going, well, I've got the money, and that wasn't it. And every time, I mean, I don't care how much money they've got, that's a comment that always comes up is, well, that wasn't it. And it's not. As a matter of fact, that leads them down a road where they're not taking as good a care of themselves and others as they should. They're not as connected with their family and taking care of their family as well as they should. So it really becomes something that it's a real challenge and issue for them, because it's coming from fear and scarcity rather than the sense of self-acceptance, abundance, and love. You know, I know that sounds a little wavy, but the truth is, the most successful businesses, and all the research is showing this the last 50 years, and certainly all my clients, is true. The more you really accept and love yourself, that relationship with yourself gets mirrored in your relationships with others. And what happens is, what happens is they just aren't taking care of themselves, they're not taking care of others, and they become very disconnected within themselves and disconnected from others. And yet they find themselves sitting on this pile of money and disappointed that they don't feel good. So success really comes from a deep sense of self-satisfaction, a deep sense of feeling like you've really contributed to the world, that you have lived a balanced life. You know, everybody kind of takes their business life and their spiritual life and their family life and their health, and they treat them as if those are different aspects of different people. And they are all one aspect of one life. And if you're not taking care of all those and the other aspects of our life, you're not going to be successful. You know, regardless of what level of outcome or financial success you've had. And I can just say that, having had the privilege to sit with the thousands of people that I've sat with, that is a common theme. So yeah, for your listeners, I would say more money will come, more success will come, if you focus on really taking care of yourself and others that you're working with, and think in terms of the greater good rather than the selfish, fear-based, I've got to get mine.
Absolutely. And you shouldn't do anything by compromising your values or who you are or any of that. I don't think that's success, right? Getting money by compromising, who you are, your beliefs, and your values is not my
anything best. Anything that feels out of integrity, you need to rework and reconsider and do differently. That's just a very simple fact. And yeah, if people had the opportunity to see and work with all the people that I've worked with, they'd see there's just no way around it. I see people get into their 50s and 60s and they haven't taken care of their bodies, and so they're running into all sorts of health disorders and they're disconnected from their wives and their children to various degrees. And of course, now the children are out and about, and so they've lost that opportunity, or at least they think they have, of reconnecting with them. But when you feel like I just was reading about a bunch of executive women in Microsoft that are in their mid-30s and all quite wealthy and doing quite well, but they've donated their life to sitting in front of that computer and making money. You know, that money's going to nannies to take care of their kids and, taking care of a house that they don't even spend much time in. And, their whole day is gone. They maybe have breakfast with their kids, perhaps a late meal with their husbands. Then they stay up and continue to work and start the next day. Saturdays are oftentimes going into the office some, and then Sundays maybe a half day on the computer. That's not a life. That is not a life that, you have to be able to step back from time to time in your life and really evaluate. Is this who I want to be? Is this where I want to go? Is this what I want to be doing? And if you don't have that privilege of stepping back, if money doesn't give you that privilege, I'm not sure what would. you're never going to really have a clear sense of where you're going. I consider myself, and you introduced me as a guide, and that's really what I am. Is people hire me to go take them into territory that they're not familiar with, and it happens to be territory that I'm intimately familiar with, and that's who were they? How did they become the person that they've become? What was their emotional backlog? What were their families like? What were different aspects of their life like? And how did those different fragments or time frames affect who they become? And every time, what we find is parts of themselves that they discarded and left behind, part of themselves that they didn't nurture and take care of and bring along to really help them become an integrated whole, so that they're optimizing, understanding, and optimizing who they truly were and what their capabilities truly are. That's the incredible piece in my work. I'm always fascinated because it's always growing, and that is the capabilities that we have. I must say, most people are spending about 50% of their energy on trying to control their life and 50% on trying to move forward in complete denial that everything is changing all the time.
Sure.
But, the cost of that kind of inner turmoil, that inner struggle, that inner tug of war, just not only depletes their own life, but it depletes the company. I have a little saying that I've recently come up with, and that's personal development runs into organizational development, which runs into creating a world that's more conscious and caring. And that's if you want your kids to be safe, having more money isn't the answer. Creating a safer, more supportive kind of world is. So yeah, it's a funny race that we've got going on out there. It's all based on fear. It's all based on scarcity. And until we really come back into a place of self-acceptance and love, we're caught in that hamster wheel. We're caught in that race of more, more, more. I've got to have more, be more, do more.
Sure.
And that's really the most self-destructive pattern I've ever seen. It's just an insidious undermining of our society.
You see these people in the entertainment industry specifically, and they reach the pinnacle of success. Mm-hmm. And that's it. There's nowhere else for them to go.
Right.
And they still haven't filled that hole or whatever that need that they were looking for. And often tragedy follows. And us externally looking at that is, why? Why did that happen? They had everything, right?
Well, they didn't have everything. They didn't have self-acceptance. They were looking out, the real pandemic that's going on right now is that we're looking outside of ourselves for things that can only be found within. And that's a classic example of they've spent their whole life trying to achieve, trying to be liked, trying to be accepted, trying to be loved from people outside of themselves, never looking within to find that self-acceptance and love, which is, it's the only place you can find it. You know, you look at any child when they come into the world, they're completely helpless. And I literally have asked all over the world, what does a child want more than anything else? Universally or worldwide, everybody knows and yells out the answer, love.
Yeah.
So my next question is simple enough. I said, well, do they want conditional or unconditional love? And everybody goes, unconditional love. And then I go, well, okay. So what will they do to get it? Anything. And then the next question is where they stop. Because I always ask, what did you do to get it? And it's what you did to get love as a child that really became your program for getting love. That's your program that's really all about you looking outside. Who do I have to be? What do I have to let go of? What parts of myself do I have to deny? What parts of what emotions are safe or unsafe to express or feel or share? And so it's really, you've got to, you know, and really, I guess, yeah, creating your inspired life, my initial program is all about that. And that was not a plug, by the way. It really is about taking and rewriting that old program for getting love that was about looking outside of yourself for that love and acceptance to healing yourself enough so that you're really looking within for that love and acceptance. And once you do that, then that inner, more developed and mature relationship with yourself is mirrored in your relationships with others. And all of a sudden, making sure you're taking care of others. You know, your business is more, less about the bottom line and more about, okay, I have this privilege of really supporting these people and inspiring them to be their best, to create products that serve the world, to really help humanity. And it doesn't matter what widget you make or what service you offer. Those companies, every time, are more successful, more productive, and more profitable by at least 40%. And my clients, obviously, lots of times they laugh at that 40% because they do a lot better than that. But, you know, it's a lie. Chasing the money does not create, not only is that the best way to create money, it's not even close to the best way of creating success in life.
This is something I found with successful people when compared to maybe people that aren't reaching their potential or goals and that sort of thing in life is personal responsibility. And in your leadership teachings, one of the primary steps in expanding to fuller leadership potential is taking responsibility for all areas of our lives. Could you share with me a glimpse of your journey and how you came to this understanding of responsibility as the driving factor for success in leadership?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I clumsily waded through life, spent about 13 years looking out windows of classrooms and waiting, wanting to be outside playing. And, you know, I entered college and I was a U.S. rowing champion. And so I was just sort of tumbling along and playing. And the Vietnam War came up and I was not a good student, oddly enough, after not doing anything for 13 years. And so I knew that I wasn't going to be able to continue in college. So I went into the Marine Corps. Naively, as I was at that point, I thought that I kind of considered just another athletic event. And of course, I did very well at it. One day they threw up a human silhouette instead of a circular target. And my little 19-year-old mind went, oh, no.
Is that me standing there? Yeah.
It was so spontaneous, so deep, that my whole body just felt like I just froze in fear with the recognition that what I was one of the best at, what I was preparing for, was to be killing people. I stood up. I don't even remember standing up. I all of a sudden was up, threw my rifle into the mud and said, I can't, I will never do that again. And of course, my drill instructors in the Marine Corps, they don't appreciate that sort of thing.
No, I bet they did.
Especially from their stars. And so it was a rough transition, a lot of physical abuse and mental abuse and that type of thing. But I found myself, you know, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I really couldn't trust all that I'd been taught. I was the all-American boy when I went in, and I just saw the lie. I'd heard all the stories from the guys coming back from Vietnam. I'd lost 62 of my 64 guys in my, you know, platoon, and I just saw the lie. And so I had to let go of all that I'd been taught. I had to let go of all those beliefs. And I had to, you know, this was the late 60s, so it was perfect timing. I really started exploring, okay, well, what are my beliefs? What works for me? What is integral for me? And in that journey, I really learned to quiet my mind, to be more present, to take full responsibility for all aspects of my life. You know, granted, it was primarily because I didn't trust others at that point, because that would have had me killing or being killed. But in time, as that trust really came from a deeper place for others, I understood that, yeah, being fully responsible for your life is the only option. You know, you can be a victim and be in that big game called the victim persecutor, you know, victim game, and just have a, at best, a B-level quality life. Or you can be willing to step out of that game and boldly explore what it's really like to learn to accept yourself on ever, ever deeper levels, to explore what levels of consciousness are available, to understand how to open up your heart and fall in love and nurture relationships with others more deeply, and find your path. And most people never have had to go, my highest intention is, and that's your compass heading in life, and then create their life moving in that direction. You know, it's, you know, that's one thing that I really look for early in my work with people is and helping them understand what their highest intention is. And the truth is, this veil of fear, this veil of disconnection keeps us from seeing that. But as we clear those things away, which happens quite easily and soon, then they begin to recognize, oh, this is what's most important to me. This is what I want to do. So the next question is, well, who do you need to become so that you can do that? And then we go into that path of deeper and deeper healing, which is really, to translate, is a path of taking deeper and deeper responsibility, more full responsibility for their life. So you're absolutely right. You can run around being a victim and pretend it's being done to you, or you can take responsibility for your life. And initially it's done with you, but I find, you know, this is going to sound really weird maybe, but I find that everything that happens into my life, everything that comes into my life, is a perfectly designed gift. If I'm in the right consciousness and the right perspective, everything that's coming into my life is perfectly designed to support me in opening up my heart and growing and loving more fully. And so with that outlook, I look for the benefits of everything that's going on. And that can be things that look pretty terrible or pretty wonderful, but that's taking full responsibility. That's taking responsibility on a sense of, okay, I trust the best. I'm going to use whatever's coming in my life to become the best person, to create the best life, to help more people fully. And it works, you know, it works. You know, I'm blessed because I get to, I'm kind of like the student in the classroom who's fascinated with the topic, you know, so I'm excited about sharing with the other students, and those are my clients. You know? Sure. So, oh, look at this. Look at what we can do with our brains. Look at what we can do with our health or issues. And
you would love if you never work a day in your life, right?
I talk to my friends who are retiring, and I go, I can't even imagine that. You know, it wouldn't have entered my mind, and it will not. I just see it transitioning more and more fully. Yeah.
Sure. So, sure.
That's success.
Absolutely. So you talked about the mental resource that you refer to as the big mind. Is that kind of what you're describing, the big purpose, or can you elaborate a little bit on what you mean by the big mind?
and kind of give it a bit of groundwork. Most people come to me with pretty noisy minds. And so literally the left and right hemisphere, the midbrain, the primal brain are all really working separately. And people usually have brain patterns that they prefer. Like maybe they're very logical, which is left brain, and very eye oriented, individually oriented, which is primal brain. And so first thing we do is in healing their backlog, their background, the earlier part of their life, is that brain starts working as an integrated whole. So integrated whole brain thinking is the first step in upgrading the brain neurologically on every level. Even at that level, that amygdala is still oftentimes what's the controlling force within the brain. And the amygdala is the emotional center. So information gets sent into the brain, passes it around, comes back to the amygdala from an emotional center generally overacts and is over dramatic, and that's how most people live their life, you know, in response and at the effect of. And so the next stage, after you've really integrated the whole brain, have it working together, all the chemical gates are more open, so you really have higher access to your higher levels of thinking. The forebrain begins to develop. The forebrain only develops in a quieter mind. It's meant to be the CEO of our brain, but it really is only capable of blossoming in a quieter mind. So as it begins to blossom, it begins to take over from that amygdala. It overrides the overreactive emotional center and becomes a much more, it's a decision maker that not only considers what's best for you, but what's best for all involved. Because it really recognizes that if handling what's best for all involved, that's going to be what's best for you. And so that is really, your brain frequency has been shifting through that. You've got much broader range, much more supportive brain frequency as your norm. And so you've got your receiver really well-tuned and capable of accessing greater amounts of information. You're more agile, you're more able to deal with change and ongoing, you know, you have less stress, all of that's going on. So that's a great place to get to. But as the brain frequencies continue to develop, it creates a bridge, and this is science, not metaphysical stuff, alpha bridge that really allows all the frequencies to be used simultaneously, which gives you access to well beyond any sense that most people would consider normal. So the big mind, that's where big mind comes in. And this is where my top execs just love this when they begin to access this, because it gives them access, rather than going down all of these dead end roads and trying to figure things out and efforting and forcing. They literally learn to just sit quietly, quiet their mind, and put out a request for an idea, a solution, an image, a design, whatever it is they're playing with. And they trust that as they breathe, that information will begin to come into them. You know, example for me is I have a hobby of designing Japanese gardens. And one of my clients, he just was so excited about that concept, and he had to have one for his wife. Her birthday was coming up, and I here I am with my business. I'm busy. I don't have time. And of course, he wanted $1 million Japanese garden. He was a tech exec in San Francisco. But so all I did, you know, I can't go back and forth for months on this because I just don't have the time for it. So I went, sat on a driftwood bench that I'd built in my top of my hill behind my house, and I just sat there quietly. I put out, okay, here's who I'm creating it for. This is my intention on how I'd like it to transform their life. This is the garden space that, you know, 1 acre. And I just watched for the next hour and a half as this lovely garden started, you know, the 120-foot stream coming into the 50, 60-foot pond with the turtle island and the bamboo forest and all the trees and the meditation temple, and just it all started coming together, getting more and more detailed with colors and sound and movement as it developed. And 3 months later, we created it. And, you know, it was such a beautiful garden that it won international and national awards.
Wow.
And the point is that imagine having that ability in all aspects of your life, where you can just sit and access the best of who and what you are. I mean, I use it all the time. You know, other people who work with me access it from me all the time. They know I can just stop that, quiet my mind, send that message out there, access the best of who and what we are, and move forward with confidence that we really have the best option available. That's big mind, and it's a really incredible gift that that one can develop, and we're all capable of it. It's not accessing some separate thing, it's accessing who and what you're really capable of.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah. You also stress the importance of mindfulness, and this is something I try to incorporate in my life as well. And I think a lot of our listeners try to as well. Are there any tips that you can give us on how to practice mindfulness in our life, or any examples?
Well, your level of mindfulness determines your level of presence, which determines your level of awareness, which determines your level of consciousness. And your level of consciousness determines really how you see and experience everything that comes into your life. So at a good level of consciousness, you're seeing everything from a positive perspective and using it and turning it into benefit for yourself and others. So mindfulness really is kind of the fabric of conscious living, the fabric of successful living. And it comes from just, I'm actually writing a 30-day program on it right now. It comes from the simple thing called breathing. Every client that I have come in here, as I'm sitting there across from them, or whether we're on video or Zoom or something, what I notice is I'll ask them a question. They stop, they go up in their head. They stop breathing and go up in their head, figure out how they want to respond, start breathing again, and then talk. They're not breathing. And they're not accessing, really. As soon as you stop breathing and you go into stress, that, you know, there's the primal brain and then there's the midbrain. There's all sorts of chemical gates between that midbrain and the higher brain, the higher level of thinking. Those chemical gates just aren't fully open when we're in any kind of stress. So they're really trying and efforting to come up with a great answer rather than relaxing and being present and trusting they can access it. So mindfulness comes first and foremost by becoming aware of how you're breathing. If you're breathing, when you stop breathing, you know, what emotions you're feeling, what thoughts you're having that are altering your breathing. Because, you know, everybody says, oh, mindfulness is so important, and I certainly agree with that. But if you're not breathing, you're never going to develop mindfulness. You know, people come to me and go, well, gee, I would really love to meditate. There's not a chance in the world that they're going to be able to meditate if they're not breathing and able to quiet their mind. You know, me sitting down to meditate, all I'm going to do is watch my monkey mind go crazy. But if I've healed my past and am breathing and being present, when I sit down, all I'm doing is looking at my breath. My breath is going in, my breath is going out. You can't quiet the mind by trying to make it quieter. That only results in trying and efforting. But if you give the mind something else to focus on, like the breath moving in and out, and there's certainly more sophisticated ways to do that, not better, but you know, more complex, I should say. But if you're just sitting there watching the breath move in and out of your body, whether you're walking, sitting, at your desk, whatever it is, then you're going to find yourself more present. You're going to find your mind more open, your body more open. You're going to be breathing. You're going to be feeling better. You're going to be thinking better. You're going to be more connected with yourself and others. And that's where you're going to discover your truer capabilities. So, yeah.
Let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about your program. So I personally get contacted by a lot of coaches, self-help organizations and that. And I tell you, like, I've had business coaches that contact me, they do an interview with me, and then I never hear from them again. I don't know what turns them off about me, but they disappear. And even on your website, you state that only about 3% of people who buy personal and professional training find success with them. What sets you apart from other training and programs that are out there available to other people?
Well, that 3% are much more self-motivated than and hungry for what they're doing. The 97% that don't succeed, I really would have to, yes, they have to take some responsibility, but I really put more responsibility on the programs themselves. I've gone through periods where I'm kind of the therapist's therapist or the coach's coach or whatever, and what I find is if you haven't done the deeper work, you can't take people into the deeper work. If you haven't gone within yourself to the depths and far beyond the depths that you're taking other people, you're going to be uncomfortable with that. So you're going to talk about it. Talk therapy, I think, is one of the, great way to make friends and have them pay for your time, but not a viable way to really create transformational therapy.
It's like the doctor who's smoking, right? Trying to give you
Well,
health
yeah, right.
advice.
I've spent my entire life, because I started out in that really dark, deep place, getting out of the Marine Corps, looking for what would allow me to develop and grow. And it's, back in the 70s, I was co-director of Brain Integration Center, and because we were really on the leading edge of what was going on, everybody in personal growth, personal development, psychologists, whatever field they were in, were coming to us because they wanted to see how we were integrating this latest technology into our work. Here I was just a kid, I'd been teaching college, but I was still like 27 probably or something like that. For me, that's a kid. I found myself in a really interesting position of here, all of the greats, all the really great thinking, leading edge thinkers of the time were coming to us, and they would offer me, I would take all of their teacher training. So I was just inundated by information and the latest in technologies and what was going on. And then we would train them in what we were doing, and then we'd co-create workshops to offer to the public that integrated their work and ours. And this is when I really, of course, in the middle of it, I wasn't, it was just life. I was hanging out with Buckminster Fuller and Joseph Campbell. People don't know those names much anymore, but they were really key people in the development and all of the leading people. And so I came through it, both, and I had my spiritual teachers at the time and was doing my own inner work. And so I naively just went down into the depths that, the deepest parts that one could go into. I explored the more expansive places that one could go to. And so for me, it was just, I kind of had a spiritual path that I'm just sort of like this, I don't care where I am in existence, it's all good. And so it's really a matter of really the broader you've created your existence, your being, your comfort zone, the more you can handle whatever comes up within others. Somebody's raging angry, I'm fine with that. I can sit right there with them and take them right into what that's all about and help them heal that. If they're traumatized, if they're, I've worked with people who, there was a little incident in Guyana where quite a few people were, committed suicide and worked with that family. And so I'm just a lot of really horrendous experiences sitting across from me. They're all comfortable for me to hang out with. And in that comfort, it allows them to see within themselves, to move deeper within themselves, and to heal that from a place of, it's kind of like they see that there's a safe place to get to. They're not waiting for me to overreact or judge or do anything like that. And I think that's, you know, my programs are just designed out of that, because I know intimately where people go and how they react to different things. And so, you know, my success rate is, you know, it's 100%. You know, I wouldn't even know what to, you know, I would feel out of integrity if it was anything less than that. And that's just my initial 2-month program. The 9-month program, they, you know, they're just rocking the world. I mean, they really are. But the 2-month program, where they're really, I call it more, I don't call it that because of bad marketing, but it's really just creating a foundation for the build, them to build their platform and their life on. You know, I see, that's, I've had that privilege both with spiritual teachers, with business leaders, with politicians, and I see how they build their life, but it crumbles because they have no foundation. They've built this platform on sand. And of course, the higher it gets, the sooner it'll collapse.
Yeah.
And then I've seen spiritual teachers commit suicide, be out of integrity, politicians and business people. You've seen, we've all watched that in the news.
Sure.
And it's all because they didn't build that platform of self-acceptance and love. They didn't heal their past to a level that really was a solid foundation for them to build their life on. So that's probably the understanding and where the success comes from, is clear up the past, create that foundation, and then consciously build the platform and enjoy the success that comes from that. And they do. I mean, I had a client, you know, a couple of years ago who ended up, you know, I think within a year, more than doubled his his 9-figure businesses, his 5 9-figure businesses, all because he saw everything from a different place. He restructured them. He came from a whole different level of quality of leadership, whole different relationship within the organizations. And, you know, and he thought he was going to lose everything when he came to me at the beginning of COVID. And all of a sudden, within months, he's, you know, having these really dramatic and amazing results, all because of a mindset within that top guy. And that's why I do the work that I do, is because if I can create enough high-level leaders who are coming from a conscious, caring place, then they're going to affect thousands and millions of people. And that's the only way we're really going to change the consciousness of the world, which is kind of my little, you know, side job.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you for that. So how do people get a hold of you?
Best way is just to go to ronstotts.com, ronstotts.com. On the homepage, there's really a bar that says 9 insightful questions. I'd really recommend they start there, because it'll give them insights into what their, you know, greatest desire is, what their greatest challenge is, giving them a really clear picture of where they are in their life and what they can do about that. So, you know, that's just something I give out for free, just to get people started on that inner journey. And then they can, of course, look up my other programs and other ways that that I'm able to serve them. So, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Ron Stotts. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Phil. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you guys for watching today. Be sure to like and subscribe for more future episodes of Success Is Podcast. If you have any suggestions, please comment below. Look forward to seeing you next time.